Hey there, Rick Singeri of Vermont Edition. Just want you to know this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm. Mention the words summer slide to kids and they'll probably get excited, thinking you've got a pool slide for them to enjoy on a hot July day or one of those classic slip and slides that you hose down with water before skimming down its length with an epic running belly flop. So you can imagine all that hopeful joy just draining from kids' faces when you tell them that the summer slide is actually a lack of learning retention from being out of school too long during the summer, and that you've got a nice math workbook filled with problems they have to solve before they're allowed to go outside and play. But there are other ways to fight the summer slide that do not involve crushing a child's spirit, and we're going to delve into those strategies today with our guest Holly Morehouse, director of the organization Vermont After School, who joins me today in our VPR studios in Colchester. Holly, thanks so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mitch.
So, Holly Morehouse, let's talk about the summer slide. In a general sense, what exactly is it?
Well, Mitch, it's a real and important issue that affects parents and families, employers, educators, and children and youth across our state. I think there's three stats that really help us understand what we mean by the summer learning slide. The first being that most students lose at least 2 months of math skills during the summer months between June and September when they come back. Low-income students, in addition, lose 2 to 3 months of reading skills during that same period of time. The third stat that I think we can also look at is teachers. 9 in 10 teachers across the nation say that they spend at least the first 3 weeks of school when they come back in late August or September reteaching skills that the students would have learned the year before. Some educators say that time period of reteaching can be as long as 6 or 8 weeks.
That must be frustrating, I would think, for teachers. They want to hit the ground running, move on to new material. I'm really curious about what you say about those math skills that are lost. You said about 2.6 months worth. Is that right?
About two months worth of competition.
How is that calculated? How do those statistics come about? How do they know that's happening?
Schools will often test when they want to look at summer learning loss, or when research studies have looked at summer learning losses, they'll look at where students score on standardized test scores or on other common test scores in June, at the end of the school year, and see how they're doing on their math in this case, and then retest in September and see where students, what they remember and what they've lost. And they are losing, they're losing those skills during that time. They're losing that familiarity with the problem solving, and it's happening as well in literacy for certain students.
The question then is what to do about this, and what does Vermont After School do? What does your program offer to help students retain some of this knowledge?
Yeah, so we're a statewide nonprofit. We were created in 2009 to support organizations that offer after-school, summer, and expanded learning opportunities to Vermont's children and youth. So we do not serve any children and youth directly, but we do is we support the entire field. So we offer training, coaching, professional development, policy, quality, standards work across the state. Also work on sustainability and funding about how you get these programs up and running.
But to be clear, though, this isn't summer school. This is a different approach.
Absolutely. Effective summer learning programs do not look like the old summer school model of old. They are hands-on. They are active learning. They are field trips. They are community service. They are students building rockets and then going out in the field and shooting them off. They're students hiking and learning to read maps. They're canoeing and talking about water quality. They're reading books about a young person surviving in the wilderness and then camping overnight and building fires. It's safely building fires. It's hands-on, active, project-based learning that combines that learning with the experiential part. It also offers a place for working on group skills, problem-solving, opportunities to take projects deep and go for long periods of time around certain themes.
Now, is there a cost to these programs? How are they funded, for example?
Programs across Vermont, the funding structures for programs are as varied and as different as the types of programs we have. So we have programs that are run by schools. We have programs that are run by community-based organizations. There are programs like the YMCA that's offering summer programs. There are specialty camps or summer programs that might be around computer coding or robotics, or welding, or sailing, for instance. I would put all of those in this under this umbrella of summer learning. Many programs are funded through family fees, participant-based fees. A family in Vermont spends on average $311 per child per week for a summer learning program. If it's a school-run program, those usually are free or are subsidized through scholarships or other dollars. Some programs use the Child Care Financial Assistance Program to subsidize if it's a licensed child care program that's running a summer program. And then grants and federal dollars also play a big role in Vermont in how we fund this broad landscape of programs for our children and youth.
Well, Holly, I wonder if some of the things you're talking about, which sound amazing, by the way, going out on field trips, learning how to weld or do, you know, rockets experiments, things like that, those are not specific to what you were talking about at the beginning, math necessarily, or reading retention. Is there some concern that, you know, the teachers that you were talking about before are going to say, look, what I need is for these kids to remember their multiplication tables or however they're teaching new math these days, and that those things aren't specific to that? What do you hear from teachers about the kind of programs you're talking about?
First of all, there's a lot of teachers that are teaching in summer learning programs. And we hear from educators that it's actually a great space to teach. You don't have the boundaries of the schedule or the classroom walls. And there's programs where a teacher will take a theme like dogs, for instance, and then you're reading books about dogs and you're weighing dogs and you're visiting the local vet and you're talking about the science and biology of dogs. So I don't think we need to teach math or reading with a drill and kill kind of mentality. We can incorporate it into what the students are passionate and interested in, and then they see the connections between the skills and the learning and their own interests and passions, and that's where the learning really sticks.
So it's like the process of learning. That's what you want to retain instead of that slowdown where, you know, summer is obviously a fun time for kids and they're out playing every day, but you don't want to lose that sort of the way that you learn things. Is that
right?
What I'm reading right?
And we don't want to lose that special time. I mean, summer in Vermont is so amazing, right? It is really special and really amazing. So we don't want to put our kids sitting in chairs in a classroom for the entire summer month. There's so many other pieces of being healthy and active and engaged that we can really take advantage of in the summer months and get them out. Learning skills like swimming is also important. Learning self-direction, self-efficacy, learning to work in a group, learning to fail, to take on a big project that you work on for multiple days and have it not work, you know, the first few times, and then be able to come back the next day and figure out why did our rockets or our robotics or our eco machine not work this time, and how do we problem solve that and work that through? So it really is. It's about learning, but it's active, engaged, passion, youth voice, youth choice, and youth direction and where they want to take their learning and their interests.
Do you think this is a problem that's gotten worse in recent years, or is it just sort of there's more awareness of it now, more teachers speaking out about the problem when they get kids back in September and they're finding this is I'm taking too much time catching up here?
I don't think it's a new problem. I think that we're slow to act on it, to act on the answers. We have models. Nationally, there are models for year-round school, and that's not what I'm here advocating for. That's an expensive model. It's often taking the same number of days and just spreading them out across the school year. I'm actually talking about more learning time and a different type of learning time that is also less expensive than running a full school day, school year model all summer long. In Vermont, we've been talking about summer learning for almost 10 years in a pretty focused way. When I went back to look at some of the data, we have data going back. But what we haven't yet done, and I think it comes from a lot of the conversations about education costs and the school day. And when we put pressures on a school budget or cap school budgets or school spending, some of the first places that get cut are summer or after school. Instead of stepping back and taking a holistic look of what do our students need as a whole and how to redesign in a bigger way how we fund education, how we set up the funding formula, and how we look at everything that our students need throughout the course of the year.
You did mention just now, Holly, that idea about maybe we should change the school year. Maybe we should, you know, have kids in school for longer. This is something that's been talked about a lot. It's not really the focus of our discussion today, but It is fair to say, isn't it, that the model that we have where kids are off for almost 3 months, it's sort of antiquated, isn't it? I mean, this goes back a long way to the reason that we do these things this way now.
It does go back a long way. And 10 weeks in summer are a long 10 weeks. I just want to be clear that I'm not sure that going year-round school is the right answer. I think we have an answer. I think summer learning programs are the answer. The National Summer Learning Association recommends 6 weeks of programs, full day, if you want to address the academic achievement gap. Right? So the gap between middle and high-income students on the standardized tests and reading and math, and where low-income children and youth score on those tests. So that gap in Vermont it can be attributed to socioeconomic status. So one of the ways to close that gap is to look at summer learning. There was a study done by Johns Hopkins that showed that by ninth grade, two-thirds of that academic achievement gap can be attributed to differences in summer learning opportunities alone. So as a state, we've said the academic achievement gap is a really important issue. And yet, we will never address it if we don't look at summer learning loss. Programs that run for 6 weeks that offer a lot of variety, a lot of choice, a lot of different structures where you can work with students in different group sizes and go off-site and different interest levels offer a really interesting and wonderful way to learn. And it's a lot of learning that we want to see in the classroom, and for various reasons we can't do it yet. I hope we will get there. So I don't want to take what's precious and really working in the summer and change it into something else. But what I want to ensure is that every student, every child and youth in Vermont has access to opportunities in the summer. I don't want to say ahead of time whether it's horseback riding or ballet or violin or soccer or robotics. I just want to say that every student needs to have choice to whatever range of activities meets their needs and interests.
We have Nora on the line from us, with us from South Burlington. Hi, you're on Vermont Edition.
Hi, this is Anora Horton. I'm the executive director of Hunger Free Vermont. And I just wanted to jump on and add to this great conversation and really important conversation about summer learning loss that there's a part of that summer learning loss that also has to do with kids not getting the nutrition they need during the summer months when school's not in session and they don't have access to school meals. So there are programs all around the state paired with these great programs that Holly is talking about that provide free meals for kids. And families can call 211 toll-free from anywhere in Vermont to find the location of free summer meal sites near them. And they can also visit our website, hungerfreevt.org, to find complete lists of all the summer meal sites in Vermont and their locations and days of operation.
Nora, thank you so much for that call. Holly, do you find that what Nora is talking about there is inextricably linked to learning year-round? I mean, we do hear that, especially low-income kids, it can be very difficult to concentrate, to absorb what you need to, whether you're in school or when it's out of school, when you're not getting the proper nutrition.
Absolutely. And Hunger Free Vermont is one of our strongest partners with Vermont After School, and particularly around summer and summer meals. We found in looking at the data together that when there's a standalone summer food site, we can reach some members of a community, but when it's integrated as part of a full summer learning program where parents are dropping their children and youth off at the beginning of the day and picking them up at the end of the day, that's when we can feed the most kids. It's about, I think, 40% of Vermont students rely on free reduced lunch rate during the school year for breakfast and lunch. So what happens in the 10 weeks if we don't have access and programming? So a quality summer learning program will provide the two meals and the two snacks. It'd be great if we could get that up to three meals. Quality programs are often running from 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., which is a really long day. And a big shout out to the amazing staff that are running all these programs.
I want to talk a little bit about things that parents can just do at home separate from a program like yours, because I'll tell a little tale out of school here, if literally so. I've got a 9-year-old daughter at home. It's summertime. We have one iPad in our house. And, you know, sometimes my daughter will ask to use it. So my wife and I have taken to saying, look, you need to do some math problems first. We've got this math workbook at home, you know, and if she does a couple of pages of that, we give her 20 minutes on the iPad. Now, you know, I probably shouldn't be saying all this to her as I'm playing Angry Birds, right? That's not showing the best, you know, father leadership there. But in a sense, is that kind of bargaining a decent way of dealing with the summer slide, do you think?
I think that's that's one great way. I think libraries are really good partners for families and parents during the summer. Many libraries run summer reading programs with incentives to get kids reading new books and getting to the library. Math games, math packets, summer learning packets. Some schools send summer learning packets home that parents and families can support their children in doing throughout the summer. I think my biggest concerns are for children and youth who don't have parents that are family members that are going to be able to support them in that way, or who are working and can't get them to the library at certain times. And I think that's where these programs can really help bridge that gap and close some of that, what we see as a real opportunity gap, and who has opportunities to have a parent who's directing them to work on math problems versus someone who a child or a young person who is home alone all day during the summer, and what are they doing with that time. I think we need to also in this conversation make sure that when we're talking about summer learning, we're not only talking about young elementary age kids, we're talking about middle and high school students as well. And for those older youth, it is a particular challenge. It's, you know, right at that age when youth are getting old enough where parents or families, when if their budget is tight and they're like, okay, they're okay to stay home, I don't need to pay for camp or care or anything like that, they're old enough to be on their own. That is right at the age where risky behaviors can kick in and risky choices. And we talk in Vermont about the opioid epidemic and having a bunch of bored teenagers sitting at home without mentors and engaging activities is not going to help that solution at all. It's going to contribute to it. So finding programs for that middle school age is actually really hard, as well as for high school age, and paying for those programs is additionally challenging. So I think it's something else in the state that we really need to pay attention to.
Yeah, and I think you want to make sure that whether it's official programs or things that you're doing creatively at home yourself, you don't want to make it seem like these things are punishments.
Right.
You don't want to make it seem like, oh, I have to do this. And it sounds like there are creative ways you can come up with to make these things, hey, I want to do this. I want to learn a little bit more, maybe before I get to play on the iPad for a little while. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We're speaking with Holly Morehouse from Vermont After School today about the summer slide, the learning loss that occurs over summer vacation when kids are just not being engaged with school activities. Let's bring into the conversation now Lisa Pollander from the Sarah Holbrook Community Center in Burlington to talk about how this phenomenon can affect different groups of people in different ways. Lisa, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Mitch. Hello, Holly.
Hey, Lisa.
So I want to start by talking about a program within the Sarah Holbrook Community Center in Burlington. And this is for people that are new Americans, English language learners. And what led your organization to start a summer program just for these ELL learners, as we call them?
Well, about 30 years ago, I had a board member who was a teacher in the Burlington School District. And Mary Ann recognized that when her ELL students left in June, they were at one level of proficiency. And when they returned to school in the fall, they had regressed. So she was seeing the summer slide before her eyes. She was taking a master's level class at UVM. And for her project, she decided to offer a tiny summer school with a colleague. They put the word out at Barnes Elementary that the two of them would be doing 4 or 5 weeks of classes, and they expected 15 kids to show up. Well, lo and behold, when the first day of summer school opened, there were 70 kids waiting at the door.
Wow.
Yeah.
And was the program able to handle that number of kids?
They made it work. These two incredible teachers paid for that entire program out of their pockets. And it just kind of slid under the umbrella of Sarah Holbrook, and we have carried that work forth ever since.
The challenges for ELL kids are pretty obvious, Lisa. It's hard enough learning a brand new language while coming from a totally different land and culture. What are some of the challenges, though, specific to summer learning for these new American families?
I think kids go home to families that don't speak English under their roof. And some of our families speak not two languages. They may speak 3, 4, or 5 languages, dependent on the path that they have taken to come to this country. So there's a multitude of language barriers to overcome. Most of our ELL families fall below the federal poverty guideline, so money is tight. Families don't have money to pay to enter their kids into programs. When kids are home during the summer, there's a strain on the food budget, on the family food budget. So we make sure kids get breakfast, lunch, and snack while they're with us.
And how do you help them access these resources? I mean, first you have to get the word out. It sounds like you were able to do that with that example you gave before. But how do you let them know that there are ways that you can help, pay for these programs?
We partner closely with both Burlington and Winooski School District, and they put forth their homeschool liaisons to assist families in understanding that there is a program available during the summer and to help them do the paperwork to actually get the children enrolled.
Let's go to David, who's on the line with us from South Londonderry. Hi, David.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to give I agree with the summer slump situation, summer slide, as you call it, and I've got three kids. But I also have teenagers, and I've found that the job market for Vermont teenagers is an important skill sometimes important financial aid. That's necessary for a family. And at age 14, they can start getting jobs. Here's the problem. If you get out of school a little earlier, you have a better chance of getting that job, either as a busboy or a counselor or something. So it's sort of an interesting perspective about changing the school calendar.
That calendar question is interesting. I mean, Holly, could you address that a little bit, what David's talking about? Because that is something that is a kind of education for kids, too, and it's getting that summer job, learning how to work.
Absolutely. Some of the projects we've been working on is especially in rural communities and the recognition that high school students and some of our smallest communities don't have access to a lot of job opportunities, a high range of job opportunities. So we've had a couple of initiatives that focus on training high school students to actually work in the after school and summer learning programs. We've had one that's in its second year, specifically around science, technology, engineering, and math. So the high school students are learning the engineering skills and also learning how to teach the engineering skills to the younger students, and then are employed and paid to work in the programs. And it also helps the programs in some of our small rural areas that struggle with staffing. So we have this mismatch of needs between high school students needing jobs and job experience and programs needing staff. And what we've been trying to work on is how do we close that gap between those two.
Lisa Pollander, we got this email from Raquel who says, can you share some information about the current state of access to after-school programs in Vermont for all families? What would improve access to the families and kids who have no access?
Funding is always a challenge in the world of childcare. So we spend an enormous amount of time fundraising so that the low-income families we serve pay either a very nominal fee or pay nothing. So small nonprofits are always struggling with the fundraising piece to make things accessible and to close that opportunity gap for low-income kiddos.
Elisa, I just want to tag on to what you're saying. Statewide, there are about 31,000 children and youth who parents report would be in summer learning programs today, right now as we're talking, if more were available and accessible. So that's 31,000 of our young Vermonters. A couple of things. I think cost is definitely one barrier. Also, we have areas of the state that do not have programs or enough choice, and we also have programs that have huge waiting lists, 75 kids on a waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
At the state level, we have been working. The legislature passed in 2013 a bill that created a fund called the Expanded Learning Opportunities Special Fund, and it was created with the express purpose of increasing access for low-income and children and families and youth, as well as underserved areas of the state. The challenge has been that the state has not yet appropriated any funding to that fund. But it is there. So if we can figure out a way to increase funding at the state level to help in some of these situations and in some of these communities to close that gap, that would be a wonderful option.
And Lisa, I wonder, too, about having educators for your program within Sarah Holbrook, talking again about these teaching English language learners. I wonder if you have some people who, and maybe you're already doing this, people who have been through this program already, who have transitioned and maybe can navigate successfully through an ELL program to become educators for new Americans themselves?
I haven't seen that happen here. I do have a kiddo that was at Sarah Holbrook when I first started in 99, who went away to college and moved out of state for a while and then moved back, and I recruited him to be a board member. And now I have one of my former kids who is now my boss. I think that's pretty cool.
That doesn't happen all the time. But would you say that in general it is a need that you have, is to have more of these educators who are able to work with these kids for programs
it's
like
this? It's definitely a need. And again, we partner closely with Winooski and Burlington school districts, and many of our summer staff are teachers with the school district during the school year. So the benefit to hiring them to work with us during the summer is that they already know the kids.
Yeah, that's right. Lisa Pollender, Executive Director at Sarah Holbrook Community Center in Burlington, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk to Jerry, who's on the line in Danville. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, I've been enjoying hearing about the programs and all of that. I, as a lifetime educator, I am aware of the summer slump and lamented it many times. There is one caveat that I think needs to be offered, and a great deal of it's positive, but if one has a small bit of math or a small bit of reading development or something like during the summer, which might be a great deal of fun, one cannot assume that it's going to go back to a framework which they've hopefully had during the academic year. The retrieval of knowledge does depend a great deal on knowing a context with which it's in, because the mind stores it in that context, and then you can retrieve it in that context. So to expect any long-term effects on the specific basics, I'm not sure that I would think that would happen. I do think the kids getting involved in this sort of thing and taking part in it is wonderful from an experience. But again, don't necessarily expect any development in the major content or skill areas.
You hit on two really important points in what you just said that I'd like to highlight. One is the idea of dosage. We know that a program that runs for 3 hours a day for 1 week is not going to address summer learning loss. It has to be that minimum of 6 weeks from the research. And it has to be the same student. Sometimes programs will run 6 weeks, but it'll be different kids in the program each week, and that's also not going to address summer learning loss because you're hitting different kids. So dosage is a really important part. So it's not enough to just read one book or do one activity. It really has to be ongoing throughout the summer. And the second thing that you hit on, which I think is so important, is that connection back to the school day. An effective summer learning program, whether if it's taught by teachers or by a community partner or some combination of the two, plus other community players in there as well, effective programs are going to be the strongest when they are connected to school day. And effective programs will start planning for the summer at January at the latest. There's a whole plan out there that's, you know, that's around summer starts in September, that you really start planning very early. Rutland has run a program for years where they have student test scores and student needs, and they use all of that information as they go into planning for the summer, and then it connects back to the school day so that you maintain that connection that you so eloquently talked about, so that the learning does translate back into the classroom so that they can be successful.
Jerry, are you still with us on the line there?
Yes, I am.
I want to ask you one more thing. As a lifetime educator, I wonder if you had any sort of strategies in your own home, assuming you have kids. I should ask you that. Did you have kids that you would teach during the summer months?
What, during the summer?
Yeah. Did you have some strategies in your home?
I tutor now that I'm retired, and most of my tutoring for the first 5 or 6 years of retirement was second generation. Actually, it all was for the first 5 or 6 years, something that I'm very proud of. But I always keep in mind, no matter who I'm teaching or tutoring or wherever I'm doing any form of education, is that a framework within the mind, a scaffolding, is just absolutely crucial. I believe strongly in Bloom's taxonomy, and the wonderful things that are being done in these summer programs do sound like super creative, super hands-on, and all that. But as the last speaker you had just prior to me speaking here, it does need to be back, needs to be related to the content content and the skills being developed in the classroom both, so that the referring back, then again, you've got you know, a scaffolding where you insert your information and then you can withdraw it from. I started reading at 10 years old full-length books, and I have read all my life. Of course, I find that a huge thing. Students do need. I'm rambling.
Not at all. I really appreciate your answer there. And Jerry, thank you very much for the call. I do appreciate it. I do want to fit one more in. Mark is on the line from South Burlington. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thank you for taking.
Sure.
Well, so when I was younger, I had learned that the whole idea of summer break started because not everyone had access to air conditioning and that it made for uncomfortable learning setting. I was wondering if there was any validity to that. And then with the change in technology, obviously, with air conditioning, why the school year isn't longer, if that is true, because it seems like it might help this whole idea of a summer slump.
Interesting question. Holly, any thoughts on that?
It's funny. I was watching a video not too long ago that was talking about schools that had gone to year-round calendars, and I was looking at the pros and cons. And one of the cons that actually came up was the cost of air conditioning schools.
Right.
A lot of schools don't have air conditioning because they haven't traditionally been there. So adding it, it had that extra burden, capital cost on top of it. So I don't know if that's the full answer, but I do think what you're hitting on is that rethinking once again, like stepping back and rethinking about what our children and youth need, what our structures look like, what our buildings look like. Often in the summer, buildings are also closed because custodians are cleaning them, and that's the only time they can do that. So the lights are out and kids are trying to scoot down the halls and so forth. So a lot of challenges.
Holly Morehouse, Executive Director of Vermont After School, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, great. It was great to be here. Thank you.